This is Jordan Seculo. 5-4, the Supreme Court requires all states to perform same-sex marriage and recognize same-sex marriages that were lawfully performed in other states.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live.
So we've got it. It is written by Justice Kennedy, as we expected. I believe that is the case. Yes. He is joined by Justice Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. That suggests to us that this is going to be upholding the right to same-sex marriage. This is what it says. The 14th Amendment requires a state to license a marriage between two people of the same sex and to recognize a marriage between two people of the same sex when their marriage was lawfully licensed and performed out of state. There were two questions in this case. The court has run the board in favor of those who do favor same-sex marriage, not only saying there is a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, but saying that if you're married in one state that does recognize it and another one that doesn't currently, it's got to be recognized everywhere. This is the best case scenario for supporters of same-sex marriage. The Chief Justice did not go with him as he did yesterday, what we saw. Chief Justice Roberts filed a dissenting opinion in which Scalia and Thomas have joined him. In addition, Scalia filed his own dissenting opinion, which Thomas joined. Thomas also filed his own dissenting opinion, which Scalia joined. Alito filed a dissenting opinion. So we have the block of five justices. Kennedy goes with the left wing of the branch. Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan upholding and finding same-sex marriage is a constitutional right. It is going to be across the board in all 50 states. And again, dissenting opinions written by each of the four justices who find themselves in the minority. And again, the bottom line, the 14th Amendment does require states to recognize same-sex marriages performed out of state.
And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Jay Seculo Live. This is Jordan Seculo, day two of breaking Supreme Court news and analysis for you today on the broadcast. You can go to ACLJ.org to stay updated. But folks, the Supreme Court today, 5-4, and a decision that was a split, and it really did come down like many thought that Justice Kennedy would be the swing along with the four liberal justices. Interesting, after yesterday's King versus Burwell and the Obamacare case where Chief Justice Roberts joined Kennedy and the liberal members of the court, Chief Justice Roberts was in the dissent. This was the case, Obergefell versus Hodges, that was going to and now has decided same-sex marriage at the state level and also at the recognition level. Some states across the country, and this was happening in larger numbers every year, were allowing same-sex marriage, and it was going through the political process that way. Other states, that were still not ready to do that. And then the challenge came to the court, and ultimately a challenge that asked two questions, and the proponents of same-sex marriage won on both today. The first question was, do states under the 14th Amendment in equal protection have to perform and grant same-sex marriages? Do they have to allow those? And then second, even if they don't, do they have to recognize same-sex marriages that were performed lawfully in other states? Both answers there, resounding yes from a 5-4 majority. So a slim majority at the Supreme Court. That was to be expected. It's not entirely shocking here that the court has done this. There will be other efforts underway. There's a lot to look through, and we've got a legal team put together for you today to do just that. We're going to look at the opinion. We're going to look at the dissents as well. Look at the religious liberty. We believe that's so key. The religious liberty and religious conscience protections are such a key piece of this. We'll talk about that as well today on Jay Seculo Live. We've only got about a minute left, so let me just kind of open the stage for you. Basically, in one of the dissents from Chief Justice Roberts, he said that there are going to be a lot more cases coming now to the court because of this holding, and that's because of how much our religious conscience is protected. How much religious liberty and religious freedom protection will a church have that doesn't want to perform, or an organization have that doesn't want to have to endorse this kind of lifestyle or marriage itself? We'll talk about it more when we get back from the break. Again, you'll stay updated. We're going to do some analysis for you at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And we'll be back. But again, if you're just joining us, the Supreme Court has granted a right to same-sex marriage and is requiring all states to perform and license same-sex marriages and recognize lawfully performed same-sex marriages that happened in another state. We'll come back. We'll break it all down for you today on Jay Seculo Live.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. If you're just joining us, some breaking news. 5-4, the Supreme Court has held that there is a right to same-sex marriage and that states must grant that right. They must exercise that right, perform and license same-sex marriages, as well as recognize those marriages that happen outside of the state. So a sweeping victory for the proponents of same-sex marriage. It's a huge cultural shift we're talking about, you know, thousands of years of history around the world, and makes the United States one of the first in the handful of countries that would recognize these kinds of relationships, not just as civil unions, but as marriages. I know there's a lot to talk about, you know, morally. There's a lot to talk about from the Christian viewpoint. But I also want to focus on the legal, you know, going through this opinion for you, because that's what we can do on Jay Sekulow Live. And also there's some telling language about the lack of religious conscious protection within this decision today from the court. Let me go to Joseph Williams, who's an attorney with the ACLJ. Joseph, let's focus on that. You had both Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito, I believe, and others concerned that there's going to be a lot of cases coming to the Supreme Court because of this holding, and they'll directly tie to what so many of our audience cares about, which is their religious liberty rights and their religious conscience.
That's correct. The majority opinion written by Justice Kennedy lays out language saying the First Amendment ensures that religious organizations and persons are given proper protection as they seek to teach the principles of their religion. But as Justice Roberts points out in his dissent, that there is little doubt that questions such as, is a pastor who refuses to conduct a same-sex marriage, will his church no longer be tax exempt? This has been a big question. They discussed it in oral arguments. And Justice Roberts says there is little doubt that these and similar questions will soon be before this court. Unfortunately, people of faith can take no comfort in the treatment they receive from the majority today. And Justice Alito's dissent has very similar language talking about this could be a problem, not only for how much power the court is grabbing today and what they find in the Constitution, but also he states that he worries that today's decision will be used to vilify Americans who are unwilling to assent to this new orthodoxy. So we can expect a lot of new cases making their way through the courts on questions about religious institutions and religious people who disagree with today's decision. How are they allowed to act on that in the public square?
Folks, this is, you know, extremely concerning, and that's because, again, we've got a situation where a very sweeping decision by the Supreme Court on the one hand. On the other hand, though, as Joseph is talking about, you've got language there which is, because it's so sweeping, and basically some hints from the majority opinion that we're not going to, you know, that you may have the speech rights but not the conduct rights. This is very disturbing. I know, Joseph, there's more to go through. I want to go to Than Bennett, the ACLJ's Director of Government Affairs. Than, I see the responses starting to come in from members of Congress, elected officials, political leaders across the country now. Tell people, what is kind of the feel on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, they're really starting to roll in, Jordan, and I think so many of them focus on what you and Joseph just touched on, and that is the religious freedom component of this. I mean, I know there's going to be, in many circles, there's going to be a lot of disappointment about the underlying ruling today, but I want our listeners to really focus in on the fact that we have a very serious job ahead of us. The ACLJ is going to have a lot of work to do in regards to what this ruling will mean for the religious freedom of Americans everywhere. I just saw a statement from Senator Ben Sasse, who talks about the decision, and then he closes with this statement. He says, "I hope we can all agree that our neighbors deserve the freedom to live out their religious convictions." Well, Jordan, as Joseph just pointed out, that is a very open question, and the Chief Justice himself has told us that when those challenges come, it may be very problematic to get those rights defended. That is where the ACLJ is going to engage. We are going to engage on not only the religious speech rights of United States citizens in regards to this ruling, but also the rights to actually live those out, and then the right for pastors to be protected from having to perform these ceremonies, the rights of facilities to have to be forced into participating in something that violates their convictions. Those challenges are coming. Today's ruling notwithstanding, we really need to focus in on the religious protections of those who have a genuine objection to what happened today.
Folks, we are, again, analyzing all of this for you as quickly as we can today on the broadcast. That's, again, there's plenty to do. And that being said, let me make it clear to everybody who's listening to this broadcast right now what the Supreme Court has done. The Supreme Court has recognized a right to same-sex marriage in all 50 states. So not just that states have to recognize marriages that occur in other states, though that is part of it, too. So that is key to their understanding. Now, this is done mostly under equal protection and the 14th Amendment. Let me go back to Joseph Williams. Joseph, explain to people where the majority opinion. I know most of us don't like it and we disagree, but explain to people kind of where they focused on.
They found a fundamental right to same-sex marriage in the Constitution. From page 22 of the majority opinion, it said, "It is now clear that the challenged laws..." And that those laws are the constitutional amendments defining marriages between one man and one woman, that those laws burden the liberty of same-sex couples, and it must be further acknowledged that they abridge central precepts of equality. And it goes on to say, and the Equal Protection Clause, like the Due Process Clause, prohibits this unjustified infringement of the fundamental right to marry. So they are finding, they say that within the United States Constitution, there is a fundamental right to marry, and that that right to marry should be extended to same-sex couples.
So that's two new statements, Joseph. I mean, first, you know, as many people have said with this case as it was coming in other cases like it, the Constitution is silent to marriage, and it should be that in those kind of situations, really a situation where it's left up to the states. I think that was a pretty middle-of-the-road approach where if you're in a state that wants to allow same-sex marriage, that's one thing. If you're in a state that doesn't, that's another. And then, you know, the people are making this decision, which also makes it a little bit more accepting. And when you get a court order pushing this, I know the country's changed a lot, but when you get a court order demanding this, it certainly changes things a bit. It'll be interesting to see the long term. It's tough to do this when we just got the opinion and emotions running high and also trying to figure out everything that's there. But that's itself a big deal, folks, that they've even recognized that there's a constitutional right to marriage itself, and that constitutional right includes same-sex marriage. So they're taking, that's again, two steps there in this case. Not all surprising, the group today. Not like yesterday's where people were surprised that it included Chief Justice Roberts writing the opinion King versus Burwell. Didn't have that kind of surprise today. We're going to continue to analyze this. Let me go to Matt Clark, though, because Matt, also an attorney with the ACLJ, we've got other work going on. You know, that's a part of this broadcast today, just to, is to underscore to people that the ACLJ, we don't stop because of a shocking case. And this is actually one we're pretty much, I think for the most part, everybody was predicting would not go the way of those who support traditional marriage. But that being said, we've got a lot of work going on.
Well, that's right, Jordan. And we're talking about our concern for the religious liberty aspects of this ruling. And I would just want to let our audience know that we have a case that we're involved in about to file, preparing to file an amicus brief in with a soldier who was actually court-martialed for displaying a Bible verse on her desk. You may have gotten an email about this, but these are the kind of cases that we're continuing to take, continuing to press forward to defend the religious liberty of all Americans from the military on down, and we'll continue to do that each and every day in courts and all across the country.
Folks, we, again, we're going to continue to update you as we continue our discussion. We come back from the break. We'll have more from the opinion as well on this. Let me go back to Than Bennett. Than, politically, there's going to be moves. I know amendment moves. I know there's some senators already supporting that. Those are very difficult efforts not to say that they're not totally possible, but they are very difficult to follow that Article 5 amendment process. I think the immediate reaction from Congress, and I'm not sure this president's going to be real helpful on it, but certainly very soon, is going to have to be religious liberty protections, religious conscience protections, because the way this is written, people of faith should be concerned.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that, Jordan. I think you are going to see both of those responses from folks on Capitol Hill. But, you know, on the constitutional amendment front, those are certainly going to be introduced. They're actually already out there. But just to be very candid with our listeners, I mean, you're absolutely right. Those are not going to get across the finish line, certainly in this political environment with this president in the White House and the hurdles that are required in both chambers and then also across the states. So while those can move forward, and I think there will be those that support those, and for good reason, I really do think the efforts that Congress needs to move on and move on quickly is to try to preempt some of these religious liberty challenges that are going to come before the court. Now, if they introduce specific protections for, let's say, pastors or religious leaders, that is not necessarily going to preclude the challenges that are eventually going to end up at the Supreme Court. But, Jordan, it can certainly shore up the arguments that will be made when those challenges come. So I would encourage our listeners, over the course of the next 2 weeks, really pay attention to those sort of, I don't want to call them fringe edges, but maybe not so much the constitutional amendment on this question. Focus in on the legislative efforts that are going to be made to protect the rights of religious Americans who don't agree with today's rulings and just want to genuinely live out their faith in spite of what happened today.
We want to hear from you on this. We're going to have more broadcasts through that, but we want to break it down for you today. Go to ACLJ.org. I think we're going to focus in on this concern about religious liberty and religious conscience protection online later today as we go through this. We want to go through and make sure we're putting out the best info possible. Go to ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. If you're just joining us, this is Jordan Sekulow. The Supreme Court has recognized a right to same-sex marriage, also for the first time really recognizing a constitutional right to marriage. But you heard me right, recognizing a right. That means all 50 states must perform and license same-sex marriages and recognize those same-sex marriages that were lawfully performed in other states. That was the holding today, a very slim majority, 5-4, Justice Kennedy being the swing. Chief Justice Roberts, who surprised a lot of people, made a lot of people angry yesterday by writing the King versus Burwell Obamacare case, now called SCOTUS Care in many places. He was in the minority on this. He wrote a dissenting opinion, and these opinions, I want to go back to Joseph and Matt, because guys, as you're analyzing this, there's a lot of concern about religious liberty and religious conscience.
As we're looking through the decisions, it was over 100 pages, all of the decisions total today. We just went through Justice Thomas's dissent, and he talks about his grave concern for the future of religious liberty in our nation. He said, aside from undermining the political processes that protect our liberty, the majority's decision threatens the religious liberty our nation has long sought to protect as well. He says, today's decision might change how marriage is seen as a governmental institution, but it cannot and should not change marriage as a religious institution. But he says it appears all but inevitable that the two will come into conflict, particularly as individuals and churches are confronted with demands to participate in and endorse civil marriages between same-sex couples.
Mm. You know, I mean, I hear you reading that, Joseph, and you know, there's a lot of concern there. I mean, we're even talking about, let me just make this clear, Joseph, we're talking about the concern for actual churches, right? I mean, that is a group you think would be most protected, and even there, they're concerned that this opens the door to that.
Yes, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito both similarly write and point to the discussion with the Solicitor General from the oral arguments in this case, in which they straight up asked him if he thinks a ruling finding a constitutional right to same-sex marriage could endanger the tax-exempt status of churches and other houses of faith. And he answered very honestly, saying he doesn't see any way that question could not come up. As Justice Thomas said, had the majority allowed the definition of marriage to be left to the political process, what Justice Scalia said today was the American democracy existing and flourishing exactly as it should, then the people could have considered this religious liberty implications of deviating from the traditional definition. But instead, the majority's decision short-circuits that process, Justice Thomas says, with potentially ruinous consequences for religious liberty.
Folks, there it is. Let me go to Matt Clark. Matt, because this may sound a little bit like law school, but you talked about in the break, and we've alluded to it even just there, this idea, and folks, you're just joining the Supreme Court. The reason why we're going through all this has recognized a right to same-sex marriage in all 50 states. They must all perform them. They must all license them and recognize those that were lawfully performed outside of the state. There's a lot of different issues, moral issues, the faith issues. What we're concerned about is the legal issues and the legal issues that look like they're coming. Even Chief Justice Roberts has said that, Matt, this difference between religious belief and actually religious expression, the exercise of religion versus belief. And though the majority opinion is, of course, you can believe what you want, they really leave the door open to whether or not you can exercise your faith and the limits of that.
That's exactly right, Jordan. And when the majority opinion talks about protections for religious freedom, they use two words. They talk about protections to advocate and protections to teach. Both of those are free speech protections, the ability to talk about, to believe and speak what you believe. However, what's missing from that opinion is any talk of a protection of the ability to practice your religion, for free exercise, for the church to say we will refuse to perform a particular ceremony or let our building be used for a particular purpose. And in his dissent, Chief Justice Roberts has some very important language, and he really nails this down and brings it home. And he says, unfortunately, people of faith can take no comfort in the treatment they receive from the majority today. So, Jordan, this is going to be something that's going to come back before courts when it deals with this issue of religious free exercise, whether you can practice your religion and not just talk about it in light of this particular holding today.
Folks, we will continue to analyze this for you at ACLJ.org. We can't get into all of that today. It's good that, I mean, maybe going into the weekend, we'll be able to get more through this. What we're most concerned about is the court has recognized a right to same-sex marriage. We disagree with the court. We believe this should be left, a decision that the states should be making. There will be other moves, and I don't want to even start commenting on those yet because I'm focused on the opinions we're reading, the dissenting opinions as well. And, Than, on Capitol Hill, I think there will be a lot of concern, and there should be wide support for it, maybe even some bipartisan support, to make sure that religious liberty and freedom and conscience protections, that we get those protections. But I'll tell you, it ain't going to come from the Obama administration.
No, it's not. It should be bipartisan, though, Jordan. I mean, even in the majority opinion that you've been reading from, the signers of that majority opinion recognize at least a portion of these religious rights. As Matt was pointing out, a lot of them are more on the speech side rather than the action side. But think about this for a minute. Just think about how much this encompasses. It encompasses not only churches. It encompasses not only buildings and facilities. It also encompasses, housing at religious colleges. It encompasses, as I think Chief Justice Roberts mentioned, religious adoption agencies. All of these questions are going to be encompassed in these challenges that are going to come before the courts. And I thought it was interesting. I was reading the Speaker of the House, John Boehner's response that came out just moments after it. And here's what he said. He said, "All human beings are created equal by God and thus deserve to be treated with love, dignity, and respect. I am, however, disappointed that the Supreme Court disregarded the democratically enacted will of millions of Americans by forcing states to redefine the institution of marriage. My views are based on my upbringing and my faith. I believe that marriage is a sacred vow between one man and one woman, and I believe Americans should be able to live and work according to their beliefs." So, Jordan, along with the religious freedom component of this, I think you're going to hear a very loud chorus from Congress as well, that the American people in many cases spoke out, and the Supreme Court stepped in and overrode what they said.
Folks, there is plenty to talk about. There's plenty to analyze. We'll have more analysis for you up at ACLJ.org. I want to go around the horn. I mean, folks, here's where I am. I think I'm a believer in traditional marriage. I think the Supreme Court should allow states to do this. I think that's pretty much clearly where a lot of folks are that share our belief. But I'm certainly really concerned about our religious liberty and your religious conscience protections. That's what I'm most concerned about. Let me go to Joseph, Matt, and Than quickly.
I think one component of today's decision is that this debate was happening on the state level. It was happening among neighbors. It was happening among friends. It was happening among family members. And when that happens, a good discussion can take place about, even if there is going to be same-sex marriage, then what religious liberty protection should there be? But it is a scary day for religious liberty, and a lot of the justices wrote about that today. And in the coming years, we'll be seeing what that looks like. And now is the time, to continue to join us here at the ACLJ and all of our work to ensure religious liberties are still protected around our country.
Yeah, Jordan, the important thing, as you pointed out here, is that religious liberty is at stake. And some of the things that the court has talked about today, from housing at Christian universities to preachers and pastors and the use of their facilities, these are the kind of things that are going to be the next level, that are going to be the next thing that are looked at by the courts, and it is important to defend religious liberty.
Jordan, I would just say, as we defend people of faith, let's just also make sure from a personal capacity we're loving our neighbor even when we disagree with them.
Absolutely. Agree with you on that, and that's true, too. That's our duty as Christians. Folks, we'll talk about it more. Go to ACLJ.org. Get updated on CR analysis. We'll be right back.
Robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
Back to the broadcast, everyone. I'm reading excerpts from my book, Undemocratic. I talk about the problems facing our country, the attacks on freedom and liberty by an unelected, unaccountable fourth branch of government, and that's the bureaucrats. But I also provide solutions in the book on how we can take our government back. But the purpose of the book is to educate you, our friends that listen to this broadcast, and to share it with your friends as well. So the book is Undemocratic. Here's where we need your help. We need you to order the book and get your friends to do the same thing. So the book's called Undemocratic. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it online, or you can get the ebook version or the hard copy or wherever books are sold. Again, the book is called Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberty and Freedom. And it's available in bookstores everywhere, certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. Ebook's available again, or the hard copy. I encourage you to get it today. Now let's go back to the book.
By early 2010, two developments were shaking American liberals to their core. The first was the rise of the Tea Party. The second was a Supreme Court case that protected the right of free political speech. Deeply troubled by multi-hundred-billion-dollar bailouts in the Bush and Obama presidencies, concerned by massive entitlements and looming national bankruptcy, and shocked at the vast reach of the expanding federal government, millions of Americans were mobilizing at the grassroots, showing energy in numbers that were already starting to thwart the Democrats' plan of a new permanent majority, hopes that flared after President Obama's landslide 2008 election, a landslide that was already slipping away by 2010. At the same time, the Supreme Court of the United States decided a critical First Amendment case, Citizens United versus FEC, or simply Citizens United. In that case, decided January 21, 2010, the High Court applied decades of First Amendment precedent to reach a rather common-sense holding. Corporations have the right to speak on political matters. Writing for the majority, Justice Anthony Kennedy affirmed that if the First Amendment has any force, it prohibits Congress fining or jailing citizens or associations of citizens for simply engaging in political speech. It also cleared the way for anonymous donors to fund corporate political speech. While the left cast this in sinister terms, in reality, the decision did little more than reaffirm a core constitutional truth. Americans have the right to band together in associations and speak about political issues. We also have the right to anonymous speech. These two rather non-controversial principles have been established since our nation's founding. After all, anonymous speech helped propel the American Revolution. Anonymous speech in the Federalist Papers helped ratify the Constitution. Anonymous speech helped protect and advance the civil rights movements. When you speak, the government does not have a right to know who you are. But to listen to the left, the combination of Citizens United and the rise of the Tea Party represented the coming of an apocalypse where shadowy secret donors would astroturf, a term for a fake grassroots movement, a political movement, to depose the Democratic majority and end its progressive experiments in healthcare, radical Keynesian economics, and abortion on demand. On the day of the ruling, President Obama called it a major victory for big oil, Wall Street, banks, health insurance companies, and other powerful interests that marshal their power every day in Washington to drown out the voices of everyday Americans. Obama later launched a direct attack on the decision in front of the justices of the Supreme Court, Congress, and the nation during his 2010 State of the Union address. He chastised the justices, saying, "Last week, the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections. Well, I don't think American elections should be bankrolled by America's most powerful interests and worse, by foreign entities. They should be decided by the American people, and that's why I'm urging Democrats and Republicans to pass a bill that helps to right this wrong." This comment was not only rated mostly false by even the liberal fact checkers at PolitiFact, It was so at odds with the law and the text of the decision that it caused a visible reaction from Justice Samuel Alito, who simply said, "Not true." Justice Alito was correct. The president wasn't telling the truth.
Again, the book title is Undemocratic. It is available wherever books are sold, but certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. And by the way, we've got both an e-reader version, which is for your Kindle or your Nook or your Apple iReader, as well as the hardback. So if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you buy your books, ask for Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom. Jay Sekulo, that's me. I'm the author. We want to make sure you get the book again, Undemocratic, wherever books are sold.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulo, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I'm reading excerpts from my book, Undemocratic. The purpose of the book is to educate you, our friends that listen to this broadcast, and to share it with your friends as well. So the book is Undemocratic. You can get it online, or you can get the ebook version or the hard copy or wherever books are sold. Again, the book is called Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberty and Freedom. And it's available in bookstores everywhere, certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. Ebooks available again, or the hard copy. I encourage you to get it today. Now let's go back to the book.
In reality, the decision empowered everyday Americans, allowing them to form grassroots associations, Tea Parties, pro-life groups, and others that magnified their voices and allowed them to impact debates, not just about Obamacare, but also about the most local of issues, including the curriculum at the high school down the street. And it was just this kind of power that the president and his allies at the IRS truly feared. How do we know? Look at their actions. In February 2010, the IRS responded to Citizens United, though not by targeting big oil, Wall Street banks, health insurance, and other powerful interests. They did not take on Exxon or Goldman Sachs or Cigna Health Insurance. Instead, they pulled every single application for tax exemption by groups whose names included the terms Tea Party, Patriots, 9/12, or other conservative-sounding phrases like We the People or Take Back the Country. By March 2010, less than 2 months after the Citizens United decision, the IRS was coordinating this effort out of Washington, D.C., and referred to the cases internally as the Tea Party cases. Not the big oil cases, not the Wall Street cases, the Tea Party cases. As 2010 dragged on, the targeting intensified, involving senior IRS lawyers and critically the director of the Exempt Organizations Division of the IRS. Lois Lerner was a known partisan. Previously at the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, she had distinguished herself by her hyper-aggressive pursuit of Christian or conservative organizations. Her attacks on the Christian Coalition, for example, were extreme. I know. I was directly involved in that case, advising the founder of the Christian Coalition while the coalition endured Lois Lerner's unprecedented assault. My friend and colleague James Bopp, one of the best constitutional litigators in America, also represented the Christian Coalition and described the scope of the investigation in testimony before Congress. The FEC conducted a large amount of paper discovery during the administrative investigation and then served four massive discovery requests during the litigation stage that included 127 document requests, 32 interrogatories, and 1,813 requests for admission. Three of the interrogatories required the coalition to explain each request for admission that it did not admit in full for a total of 481 additional written answers that had to be provided. The coalition was required to produce tens of thousands of pages of documents, many of them containing sensitive and proprietary information about finances and donor information. Each of the 49 state affiliates were asked to provide documents, and many states were individually subpoenaed. In all, the coalition searched both its offices and warehouses, where millions of pages of documents are stored, in order to produce over 100,000 pages of documents. It's important to understand why Bopp emphasized the scope of this discovery. In litigation, it's a common bad faith tactic to attempt to metaphorically bury your opponent in a flood of document requests, taxing their resources to the limits to answer information demands. To do this to a nonprofit as part of a massive fishing expedition was both chilling and unacceptable. The FEC left no stone unturned. As the taxpayer advocate noted, furthermore, nearly every aspect of the coalition's activities has been examined by FEC attorneys, from seeking information regarding its donors to information about its legislative lobbying. The commission, in its never-ending quest to find the non-existent smoking gun, even served subpoenas upon the coalition's accountants, its fundraising and direct mail vendors, and the Christian Broadcasting Network. But then it got much worse. The FEC turned its attention to the actual religious content of Christian Coalition activities. Again, according to the taxpayer advocate, FEC attorneys continued their intrusion into religious activities by prying into what occurs at coalition staff prayer meetings and even who attends the prayer meetings held at the coalition. This line of questioning was pursued several times. Deponents were also asked to explain what the positions of intercessory prayer and prayer warrior entailed, what churches specific people belonged to, and the church and its location at which the deponent met Dr. Ralph Reed. The FEC put pastors under extreme scrutiny, again according to the taxpayer's advocate. One of the most shocking and startling examples of this irrelevant and intrusive questioning by FEC attorneys into private political associations of citizens occurred during the administrative depositions of three pastors from South Carolina. Each pastor, only one of whom had only the slightest connection with the coalition, was asked not only about their federal, state, and local political activities, including party affiliations, but about political activities that, as one FEC attorney described as personal and outside of the jurisdiction of the FECA, the Federal Election Campaign Act. They were also continually asked about the associations and activities of members of their congregations and even other pastors. At one point, the FEC even asked Oliver North what it meant when friends prayed for him, a line of questioning Lieutenant Colonel North rightly found offensive. Yet Lerner pressed on, far more focused on suppressing the Christian Coalition than respecting the First Amendment rights, including religious liberty rights, of American citizens. And make no mistake, Lois Lerner was a biased, partisan liberal. Years after this investigation, she was caught using her official IRS email account to call conservatives, quote, crazies and terrorists with a capital R, and even used expletives to describe conservative groups. Speaking of conservatives she heard on radio, she said, quote, maybe we are through if there are that many, expletive omitted, end quote. Then she said, speaking again of conservatives, so we don't need to worry about alien terrorists, it's our own crazies that will take us down. In a bureaucracy governed by the Constitution, one that respects the rule of law, defends individual liberty, and is staffed by professionals, using official government email to slander an entire class of people would mean the end of a bureaucrat's career. Likewise, in a bureaucracy governed by the Constitution, one that respects the rule of law, defends individual liberty, and is staffed by professionals, questioning American citizens about the content of their prayers would mean the end of a bureaucrat's career. But when bureaucrats have immense power, enjoy near absolute job security, and are brazen partisans, this kind of inquiry helps one rocket to the top. And so Lois Lerner found herself in a key position at the IRS, ready to choke off the Tea Party before it had even had the opportunity to fully form. Lerner and her numerous IRS colleagues acted with an enthusiastic cheerleader in the White House, with President Obama even implying that conservative groups were receiving foreign funds. In August 2010, just 3 months before the November 2010 midterms, President Obama warned about attack ads run by shadowy groups with harmless-sounding names. He went on to say, "We don't know who's behind these ads, and we don't know who's paying for them. You don't know if it's a foreign-controlled corporation. The only people who don't want to disclose the truth are people with something to hide." On September 16, 2010, President Obama was at it again, warning against a foreign-controlled entity that could be providing millions of dollars for attack ads. Less than a week later, he complained that nobody knows who was supporting conservative groups. The campaign continued. On September 21, 2010, the White House tried to enlist the mainstream media. Sam Stein, writing in the Huffington Post, described how a, quote, senior administration official urged a small gathering of reporters to start writing on what he deemed the most insidious power grab that we have seen in a long time, end quote. Insidious power grab? That describes the IRS, not the pro-life and conservative groups they were at that very moment systematically targeting. It is the IRS that is on the power trip. What do I mean by targeting? First, a bit about legality and process. One of the best ways to engage in so-called issue advocacy is to form a nonprofit corporation under Section 501(c)(4) of the Internal Revenue Code. While donations to these corporations aren't tax deductible, the corporation's income isn't taxed, and the donations to the corporation can be anonymous. This protection, which prevents the government from controlling the message through the power to expose dissenters or to tax dissent, means that so-called C4s are nearly ideal vehicles for engaging in cultural and ideological argument, a fact the left has long known. Think of the most influential organizations on the left, like Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, or the radical MoveOn.org. They all have affiliated 501(c)(4)s that enable them to fully engage the public. In short, nonprofit advocacy corporations have been around a long time. The IRS has dealt with them for a long time, and conservatives have been behind the curve for an equally long time. The Tea Party started to correct that imbalance, and the IRS was outraged. Normally, a 501(c)(4) application is a simple process. Form the corporation, obtain an employer identification number, then complete and file an IRS Form 1024, IRS Form 8718, and the appropriate fee. Typically, the IRS will review the form and approve the application in a matter of months. On occasion, the IRS will respond with a few follow-up questions if the application is unclear or information is missing. Rarely does the process drag on.
I've been reading excerpts from her book, Undemocratic. It is available in bookstores everywhere. Look, the fact of the matter is freedom is under attack like never before. And the truth of the matter is the fourth branch of government, which doesn't exist in the Constitution, by the way, are the unelected bureaucrats. And then, unfortunately, they have become the most powerful branch of government. So I'd ask you and your friends to go buy a copy of Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom, and How We Can Take It Back. And I believe we can take it back if we work together on this. Again, the book title is Undemocratic. It is available wherever books are sold, but certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. And by the way, we've got both an e-reader version, which is for your Kindle or your Nook or your Apple iReader, as well as the hardback. So if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you buy your books, ask for Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom. Jay Sekulow, that's me. I'm the author. We want to make sure you get the book again, Undemocratic, wherever books are sold.
When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I'm reading excerpts from my book, Undemocratic. I talk about the problems facing our country, the attacks on freedom and liberty by an unelected, unaccountable fourth branch of government, and that's the bureaucrats. But I also provide solutions in the book on how we can take our government back. But the purpose of the book is to educate you, our friends that listen to this broadcast, and to share it with your friends as well. So the book is Undemocratic. Here's where we need your help. We need you to order the book and get your friends to do the same thing. So the book's called Undemocratic. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it online, or you can get the ebook version or the hard copy or wherever books are sold. Again, the book is called Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberty and Freedom. And it's available in bookstores everywhere, certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. Ebooks available again, or the hard copy. I encourage you to get it today. Now let's go back to the book.
As I said, the IRS has been doing this for a long time. But what happened when the Tea Party and other conservatives applied? How were they treated differently from the norm? A chart from the House Ways and Means Committee tells the story. When evaluating progressive organizations, the IRS singled out only 7 groups for additional scrutiny, and of those, 100% were approved for tax-exempt status. By contrast, the IRS singled out 104 conservative groups, asked an average of 14.9 additional questions, some with multiple subparts, and ultimately approved fewer than half. This chart was first published in July 2013, and some of the conservative groups waiting for approval were still waiting as of the end of 2014. At the ACLJ, we are litigating on behalf of 41 groups, some of which have been waiting for approval since 2009. That means they applied for a tax exemption before the iPad was invented, before LeBron James went to the Miami Heat and won 2 championships, before the most recent British royal wedding, much less the British royal baby. The list could go on. And the entire time that the Tea Party groups waited for these tax exemption determinations, they were losing donations, spending hours with lawyers, and answering voluminous questionnaires rather than organizing and advocating for conservative and pro-life ideas. And what about those questions? The IRS used the tax exemption application process to attempt to conduct litigation-style investigations into the funding and operations of not just the Tea Party groups, but also their individual volunteers and their family members. Here's a sampling of the questions the IRS asked. Did you directly or indirectly communicate with members of legislative bodies? If so, provide copies of the written communications and contents of the other forms of communications. And please describe the associate group members and their role with your organization in further detail. A, how does your organization solicit members? B, what are the questions asked of potential members? C, what are the selection criteria for approval? D, do you limit membership to other organizations exempt under 501c4 of the code? And E, provide the name, employer identification number, and address of the organizations. And do you have a close relationship with any candidate for public office or political party? If so, describe fully the nature of that relationship. List each past or present board member, officer, key employee, and members of their families who, A, has served on the board of another organization, B, was, is, or plans to be a candidate for public office, indicate the nature of each candidacy, C, has previously conducted similar activities for another entity, and D, has previously submitted an application for tax-exempt status. These questions are illegal, pure, and simple. They are outside the scope of legitimate inquiry and violate the First Amendment. It is none of the IRS's concern whether a Tea Party board member's father served on his church's board of deacons. And remember, these inquiries were not made after an allegation of wrongdoing. or part of any investigation of wrongdoing, but purely as part of the IRS's, quote, routine examination of conservatives. How did we know these kinds of inquiries are illegal? Because the Supreme Court had considered cases like this before, decades ago, when state governments were using similar tactics to suppress the civil rights movement. In 1958, in NAACP versus Patterson, the state of Alabama challenged the right of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, to operate in the state unless it disclosed certain information to the state, including its membership lists. The court, in a short but forceful opinion, denied Alabama's demand, noting, "Effective advocacy of both public and private points of view, particularly controversial ones, is undeniably enhanced by group association, as this court has more than once recognized by remarking upon the close nexus between the freedoms of speech and assembly. Of course, it is immaterial whether the beliefs sought to be advanced by associations pertain to political, economic, religious, or cultural matters, and state action which may have the effect of curtailing the freedom to associate is subject to the closest scrutiny." The court went on, "It is hardly a novel perception that compelled disclosure of affiliation with groups engaged in advocacy may constitute as effective a restraint on freedom of association as the forms of governmental action in the cases above were thought likely to produce upon the particular constitutional rights there involved. This court has recognized the vital relationship between freedom to associate and privacy in one's associations." In other words, when the government demands to know whom you meet with or work with when you're engaging in political advocacy, that may deter you from joining groups. Would you be more or less likely to join a political organization if you knew that your name and address would be immediately transmitted to the government? Would you be more or less likely to join an advocacy organization if you knew that you'd even have to disclose the activities of your family members? It's simple common sense that Americans want and demand a degree of privacy in their speech and activities. If we're going to speak out, we want it to be on our own terms, not when and how the government tells us to. So when comparing the cases, it's plain that the IRS recent demands of conservative groups went far beyond the state of Alabama's request for the NAACP's membership lists. After all, the compelled disclosures included probing questions about donors and even family members of group leaders, information that went even beyond the information the state of Alabama wrongly demanded from the NAACP. Not only was the IRS's request for information unlawful, it was also intimidating. Just as Alabama tried to intimidate the NAACP in the 1950s, President Obama's IRS tried to intimidate conservatives throughout his first term and beyond. It is sad and ironic that the Obama administration was using the old tools of segregationists against new political movements like the Tea Party. At the ACLJ, we knew of Obama administration misconduct before Lois Lerner and the IRS issued their insincere confession and apology. In fact, in March 2012, we demanded answers asking whether there was a broad-based IRS assault on the Tea Party. In response, the IRS lied. Former IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman told Congress that the IRS prides itself on being non-political and that its scrutiny of conservative groups was typical. In reality, based on our clients' experiences, it was clear that the IRS conservative targeting campaign was in full swing, was being conducted from IRS offices from coast to coast, and was discussed and monitored at the highest levels of the IRS. In May 2013, we'd seen enough. We filed a lawsuit, the largest in ACLJ history, ultimately including 41 conservative and pro-life organizations in 22 states. It represented a comprehensive attack on the IRS targeting scheme and laid out in detail the consequences of the IRS misconduct. The ACLJ filed its case with the following understanding. The IRS scheme had a dramatic impact on targeted groups, causing many to curtail lawful activities, expend considerable unnecessary funds, lose donor support, and devote countless hours of time responding to onerous and targeted IRS information requests that were outside the scope of legitimate inquiry. Moreover, we said, unlawful IRS targeting, despite public apologies, is ongoing.
Again, the book title is Undemocratic. It is available wherever books are sold, but certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. And by the way, we've got both an e-reader version, which is for your Kindle or your Nook or your Apple iReader, as well as the hardback. So if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you buy your books, ask for Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom. Jay Sekulo, that's me. I'm the author. We want to make sure you get the book again, Undemocratic, wherever books are sold. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.